If you're just joining us, it is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent, and we're looking at new scientific ways to try to stop the spread of Asian carp in Wisconsin. There's a multi-million dollar underwater boombox that's up and running now at a dam in Kentucky, and it could potentially help keep the invasive carp out of the Great Lakes. So what concerns do you have about Asian carp out of control? We're at 800-642-1234. Teresa Lewis is the Center Director for the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service Midwest Fisheries Center, which is based in Onalaska. It is the Midwest region's fish technology center. She's also the research team coordinator for the Bioacoustic Fish Fence in Kentucky. Teresa, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Thank you very much.
So explain for us this new bioacoustic fish fence. What is it?
So it is a novel way to deter fish that was developed by Fish Guidance Systems, a company that's based in the United Kingdom. And it works basically to steer fish away from particular areas by using a bubble curtain, sound, and strobe lights to startle the fish and basically turn them away from the area where the bath has been installed.
Okay, so I'm seeing bubbles rising up, and there's sound inside the bubbles?
That is correct. And then as those bubbles are released, just naturally the physics of bubbles as they pop, then that sound is available. The animals, the fish, hear those, and it has a deterrent impact.
How loud are the bubbles?
So that's not really something, even in a bubble curtain like this, it's not really something that people can detect very clearly. It's a low-frequency signal, and so it is, very low.
So this fence is now in place in the Barkley Dam in Kentucky. What are you seeing? It's only been in place for over a week, I understand?
Right. And so the research component of this is that we are, as researchers, collecting data. As the curtain is turned on for a week, we're tracking specific fish, silver carp, and a few native species that have telemetry tags, radio tags. And basically, as they either pass through a receiver array that is around the bath, we're seeing whether they're getting very close or whether they're moving away. Now, it's very early in the project, and so with our rotation of these, the bath being turned on and turned off on a weekly basis, we really haven't been able to collect enough data yet to say effectively where, whether the animals are startling sufficiently, but it does look like it may replicate what we've seen in laboratory trials or in very small field trials that fish will turn.
Does the fence hurt fish in any way or anything else in the habitat?
No, it does not. It is at the most the bubbles may, startle fish that are near that area, but again, there is no harmful effect.
So you're trying to just detour these fish to go or stay away from an area where they could infest more waterways, or are you trying to get them to go a different direction?
So we are trying to keep them out. What's great about this site that we're using as a test site is it is a lock approach. And so as you know, for the lock and dam system on various waterways, one way that fish can move through that is when those gates open for navigation. And so as the curtain is there, we're hoping to move those fish out of the way. Yes.
And are all fish, would they all react to this curtain in the same way, or are Asian carp special in some way?
Well, Asian carp are special in some way, and there are a few other fish who share some of the same type of hearing that they do. But for Asian carp, the connection between the ear and the swim bladder in fish is direct, and so the vibrations that are caused through that hearing sense actually are felt more deeply in the fish, and so they just have more of a sensitivity, yes. Different fish have different ways of interpreting that sound, but Asian carp in the laboratory seem to be more sensitive to this, yes.
So you're in your early days of testing. This is a multi-year long trial. If this fish fence ends up successfully deterring the Asian carp, do you think it could become a more common way of preventing the invasive species from spreading?
It has that potential, yes.
In what way? You know, what could this be? Because Asian carp are so harmful to our waterways. Is this a breakthrough?
It may be. Certainly the laboratory study suggests that it may be. And so the good thing about this study is putting it in an area where there are fish so we can actually determine impacts, as opposed to putting it in an area where there are not as many Asian carp. We'll be able to see how effective it is. And at the same time, we will also learn what scale. Like, this is a lock chamber, so that's very different than putting it through some other area on a river or in a backwater area. So it's going to tell us as much about the technology, but also about this specific type of location, whether it'll work really well in our navigational system area as a, you know, non-physical wall type of barrier for the invasion control.
We're talking with Teresa Lewis. She's the center director for the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service Midwest Fisheries Center, which is based in Onalaska. We're looking at this technology to help stop the spread of Asian carp. You can join in. What are your concerns about invasive species in our waterways? Have you noticed zebra mussels or other invasives in Wisconsin? What should be our best defense? We're at 800-642-1234, email ideas at WPR.org. Teresa, explain, how did Asian carp get to Kentucky and other U.S. waterways in the first place?
So when we speak about Asian carp, we're actually talking about four types of carp in the United States that have been brought in either for control of vegetation like grass carp, or as food species. The bighead silver and black carp were brought in more for aquaculture purposes. But they were brought in with intentions of having a specific task that people could use them for, and unfortunately, through escapement, they've been able to establish in certain areas much more to the south of us, and they are creating a significant problem.
Yeah, how do they wreak havoc? What do they do in our ecosystems?
Well, so for one, you know, grass carp, as we know, do eat vegetation, and so they can kind of strip that as habitat or potential food species or food for other species. But they are very effective feeders, and they will outcompete other fishes in the same area for food resources. And then they tend to reproduce in very large numbers. So a single fish can produce many more young fish than what some other species may. And so they can just begin to fill a habitat much more rapidly and push out those other fish species that are less successful in competing for resources.
And so you've seen them move from our southern waterways, moving up into the Midwest, closer here to Wisconsin. Where are they now?
Well, depending on the species, okay, when we talk about Asian carp, we don't have in the upper Mississippi River, we don't have a established self-sustaining population, but these fish can range. And so we've seen a few moving through the upper Mississippi River, you know, into Wisconsin, Minnesota, and moving back, but no established populations. For black carp, we've seen them as far north as Cape Girardeau in Missouri right now, but there have not been any establishments of populations in our larger rivers and tributaries in the northern part, the upper Mississippi River. And certainly we're trying to manage and control an invasion front such that they do not establish in the Great Lakes.
Let's bring in a call now, Jay in Birchwood. Hi, Jay.
Hi there. How are you?
Good.
My comment or question, I guess, is it seems like there's always some unintended consequences of something like this, this barrier, and we find out about it 10, 20 years later. And that's exactly why we have Asian carp in the first place. I guess my point is if you find yourself in a hole, the best thing to do is quit digging, and maybe we are the invasive species.
Jay, thanks for the call. Teresa, you know, what are the perhaps unintended consequences that might come when we approach technology with an invasive?
Well, you know, it's something that a research team always has to be mindful of, and that's why we generally start in small scale and look to, you know, what may occur in the most controlled conditions possible. So we do consider things both from the aquatic species and habitat, you know, potential impacts, but also impacts on navigation and on, you know, human health of boaters and things like that. With the BAF, that thus far we have not seen anything that looks like there would be any type of consequences. Certainly this BAF is being tested in an area that has already you know, had a lock and dam installed, and so it's a very engineered environment. But we are monitoring the impacts of native species.
And when you say BAF, talking about bioacoustic fish fence with Teresa Lewis, Center Director for the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service Midwest Fisheries Center. She's telling us how Asian carp have long been recognized as a threat to our waterways. New technology and field testing may provide some hope as she works with a bioacoustic fish fence. You can join in with your questions, 800-642-1234. We'll get back to this conversation with scientist Teresa Lewis in just a minute here on the Ideas Network. We're exploring novel ways to get a handle on the Asian carp problem. It is the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Scientists learned Asian carp don't like loud noises, and a new type of fish fence emits sound like a disco barrier that could potentially help keep Asian carp out of the Great Lakes. It's one of the latest methods trying to contain the invasive species that have destroyed habitat for native fish everywhere they've been. Do you live near a body of water that has Asian carp? Do you go fishing? Have you noticed the fish? Are you concerned about Asian carp and what they could do to our Wisconsin waterways? Join in 800-642-1234. Teresa Lewis is Center Director for the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service Midwest Fisheries Center. She is the research coordinator for this bioacoustic fish fence in Kentucky. Teresa, Asian carp DNA has been found in Lake Calumet in Chicago, and that's only 7 miles from Lake Michigan. How urgent is this problem at this point?
Well, that's a very good question. An environmental DNA, or what we call eDNA, that has been found that we use as an early detection tool is something that should be used with a combination of different types of gear for early detection and monitoring. There are different sources, aside from live fish, for environmental DNA of Asian carp. For example, if people eat fish or if they've you know, purchase something from a food market and then they're throwing away waste parts and somehow that gets into a natural waterway. So there are a number of ways that DNA can get into a water body. And now one of those is, of course, if there is a fish swimming in that area, whether it stays there or moves on. And so we always maintain a level of concern when we have those types of positive detections, but we always use environmental DNA as one of multiple gear to determine whether or not there are actually live fish present.
What could happen to the Great Lakes system as a whole if Asian carp survive there and thrive there?
Should self-sustaining populations be established, they would, of course, as an invader, they have not much in the way of natural predators there. And so increased numbers would lead to decreased food for other types of fish that would have higher value potentially to us, either for recreational species or because of their, you know, natural niche and what they would usually do in that environment. And silver carp, as you may be aware, actually will jump when they hear boat motors. And so there is a bit of a human health risk. So it could easily be something that might displace other more attractive, you know, or natural native species in that area. And
so the videos of them jumping and hitting mm-hmm. Fishers in the face, that's a real thing.
That's a real thing. And it's only with silver, so it's not with the bighead black or grass carp, but it is a unique phenomenon that has led to individuals being injured while they're having a leisurely boat ride in some of these areas where silver carp have moved in.
Let's take a call now. Tom is joining us from Cedarburg. Hi, Tom.
Hi, Kate. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I was wondering if your guest could tell me, how did these four different types of carp even get into the U.S.? Was it U.S. government stuff, or was it private industry brought these in?
So it was primarily private industry. So they were brought in either to as food fish or for vegetation control, for example, in wastewater treatment plants and other things. So there was a market that was identified, and industry, you know, came in to try and fill a void with the best of intentions.
Tom, thanks for the call. How fast do Asian carp reproduce in general?
They are very quick to mature reproductively, and so it does not take much time at all for these fish, you know, after being spawned in 1 year and making it through to consume enough resources and grow large enough that they will reproduce.
We're talking with Teresa Lewis, Center Director for the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service Midwest Fisheries Center. We're exploring what a new bioacoustic fish fence could do to stop Asian carp from spreading. Do you think this technology could work? What efforts do you want to see on a state and federal level to stop the spread of invasive species? We're at 800-642-1234. Teresa, the bioacoustic fish fence in Kentucky, I understand, was a $7 million project. Is the cost there the fence itself, or is it the research around it?
That is primarily for the technology itself, the physical technology, as well as the additional things, fish tags and what have you. There's been a lot of leverage support from all of the partners to provide the actual person hours to do the research for this project.
Do you think that cost could come down if you find that fish fences would work in other areas?
I think that there is the possibility that may happen. This was, you know, there are a lot of lessons learned as you construct something and install it for a first time. So I imagine there might be efficiencies in that, yes.
What other efforts are underway around the Midwest to stop the spread of Asian carp? What's going on out there among scientists?
Well, so there are for aquatic managers, fisheries managers, there's a lot of physical effort going in for removal as it relates to commercial harvest or through state and federal agencies and partners for physical removal. But we're also learning to better track to understand where these fish are and where they're moving at different times of the year so we can you know, inform those management decisions. There are also other deterrents that are under development and study to look at other ways to provide either a physical barrier or some other sort of agent that might either in a selective or non-selective way be able to remove these fishes if we were to, for example, use some sort of technology to herd them into a backwater area, where then we could target removals more effectively of Asian carp.
So they're certainly under surveillance. Let's go to Kevin now in Janesville. Hi, Kevin. What's your question?
Hi, my question is this system being activated continuously or sporadically? Is there a concern that long-term exposure to these sound bubbles, et cetera, the fish will be accustomed and the system will no longer be effective?
Well, that's a really great question, and we call that process of becoming accustomed to the sound, habituation. So some of that has been studied in the laboratory, and different types of sounds may habituate with fish more than what we have learned to date may occur with the particular sound signal for this bioacoustic fish fence. But currently, we are operating in an on and off periodic schedule so that we can actually see if that occurs.
So, and how often do you turn it on and off?
Currently, the research team has that turning on and off. It's very early days, but we will be looking at a weekly schedule. There will be times when the bioacoustic fish fence will require maintenance or other sorts of things that we'll have to, you know, maybe shift that schedule somewhat. But on average, for the next couple of years, as we study and learn as much as we can about this fish fence, we will be turning it on and off on a weekly basis.
And very quickly, when do you see that you'll have a really good sound abundance of data to make some projections on this technology, on this fish fence?
Well, we're really excited about that. This installation of the fence was delayed from the summer until just this past month. We have tagged fish in the area, and we'll be learning more, but especially then, there will be another large-scale fish tagging event in February, and we hope that sometime in spring or summer next year that we'll have the results to report out.
Teresa, thanks for joining us.
Thank you. It's been my pleasure.
Teresa Lewis is Center Director for the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service Midwest Fisheries Center that is based in Onalaska. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. This is The Morning Show. You're listening to the Ideas Network.